Welcome to Exploration 1, Module 13. We're still doing... we're trying to finish off the practical exercise this week. And I've bounced the workstations on Pod 1. If you are lucky enough to be running on Pod 1, those workstations are now have copies of BC, Wireshark, and IP Calc on them. Correction, T-Shark. Should we wander down to the lecture theatre? Okay, before we get started, does anybody have any questions, issues, queries? I don't know whether I've announced it yet, but bad news for everybody, the Chapter 8 lab has now been modified, and I'm starting to work my way through the Chapter 9 labs. So expect some more labs to turn up in the individual chaptered folders for your enjoyment. But the Chapter 8 ARP lab has been modified.
Is there one for 7 as well? I think that's where I left off.
Hang on, I'll tell you.
There wasn't a few weeks ago, but you had said you were still working on adapting.
Oh, it's possible. I sat down yesterday and managed to modify the 8 lab and... Hang on, I have a look, because... recording has started, but I do have an audio editor. So if you would like to say naughty things at me, I can edit them out.
Oh, I just wondered about the other... there were a couple labs for Chapter 6. I wondered if those were still in the works.
I thought they were... I'm just about to look. I've modified 7... 5... Yeah, 752 has been modified, so that's ready to go. And there are 2 labs in Chapter 6 that have been modified. Are there more than that that need to be done?
There were some other ones in the unmodified section.
I will look at those and see if I can tidy those up to be doable. Now, keep in mind, guys, that one of the labs is a cable making and testing lab. So what we need you to do is toddle off to the cable making and testing section of Discovery, and yes, I will work at linking it into Exploration at some point so that you guys have access to that lab recordings folder as well. And you write 3 or 4 paragraphs on how to make and test a cable. Boring, but if anybody finds me an accessible cable meter, I'll make you all do it, really. But we haven't found an easy way for vision-impaired people to make cables at this point. The other thing that's worth mentioning is that in the lab that deals with ICMP and ARP, which I think was around Module 7 or something, I don't know, I put groceries away and then promptly forgot, so I'll have to go back and look. It is possible to go, and this is written in the lab, -F space quote ARP and ICMP, and that will give you both of those protocols and nothing else. So you guys shouldn't have too much trouble with that one.
Just one question, okay. On some of the...
Yeah?
On some of the binary stuff, did you want the whole problem worked out as far as decimal to binary conversion, or just the results, like converting IP addresses to binary and so forth? If you wanted the whole like the subtraction steps written out, or is just the answer sufficient for those?
If you get it wrong, you get to submit your working. Is usually how I do that. Okay. So if you can just give me the answers and they're correct, and I check them and they're correct, you're pretty good to go. And if you have actually done it with a calculator, you're going to fail the Cisco exam, and that's just how it is. So we're relying on people not to use calculators as much as possible. Obviously, shortcuts for adding and stuff, yeah, but well, it's sort of a good faith thing. I can't supervise whether you guys are using binary to decimal converters at home, honestly.
I did remember to write to Ian this week about the Exploration 2 interest and Linux course interest. So hopefully he didn't reply, but I assume he got it.
I'll check. I have also... See, a lot of people are trying to push me to make the course so that it teaches you what you need for an RHCE or whatever. The only problem with that is I don't have an RHCE and I don't have the financial means of getting one at the moment, so I can't see that happening for this round of the course, unfortunately. And the fact that I can't stand Red Hat doesn't help either.
What about the, is it LPI?
That's the Ubuntu one, or the open source one.
Might that be a little more to your liking and maybe cheaper, easier to get?
Oh, I'd be happy to sit down and possibly do an LPI and then make a course that looks like LPI, but if we're running in January, I think we're going to run the initial run through the initial run through is going to be getting people familiar with Linux and its systems. And for example, Brian wants me to cover LVM, which I think is a worthy thing to be covering. Things like snapshot, logical volumes, and that sort of stuff. Backup, restore, rsync, various basic shell management, cron. Yeah, there's lots of things we can teach. And I mean, if anybody wants to come in and do a guest lecture on any topic, they're certainly welcome to do so. We can work that out. But that's sort of the plan of attack for the people who might be taking the course when they're looking at taking it, to get them comfortable at a shell prompt doing systems administration. And I'm going to strongly push for people to either have a virtual Linux box, which is going to be our preferred thing, or you can sign up with somebody like GuideVPS and get like a $10 a month machine in the cloud for a couple of months while you're doing the course. That will be sort of strongly recommended if you feel inclined to do that.
And make everyone use Ed.
I wasn't gonna make everyone use Ed, but I was certainly gonna strongly suggest it. To be fair, it's very fast for the sort of editing tasks that I'm doing.
I was terrified of it, and you convinced me to actually like it, and now I do. I'm not overly proficient at it yet, but I will be.
My ex-wife is heavily into Ed, and we had a mini fight the other day when I'm like, oh, you should just be able to do .com/$s/blah. She's like, yes, I do know how to use Ed, dear. I'm like, oh, sorry. Carry on then. Alrighty. So yes, we are very seriously looking at running that, and I think we're looking at starting in early January because things are going to get exceedingly busy after that, with potentially Exploration 2 if we're ready to fly with that, and all that sort of good stuff. But yeah, so now we've just got to go and start advertising it and see if we can't get some people to take it. Hello. You can sign in and say hello to them if you want. We're just about to start. It's up to you, Ian. Leave you on. Oh, that's unusual. Yeah. All right, guys. Has anybody played with the remote bundle since I bounced it the other day? I think it was Friday or something. Most of it should work. Are we right to get in and start finishing off this topology and put some routing protocols and stuff in today, and then we'll finally have this horrendous practical exercise out of the way?
I was in there briefly when? Saturday? Some point this weekend, only on pod 2. I didn't check anything else, but I was looking at some router things on pod 2 and it was okay.
Oh, good. Eventually I want some other way of authenticating with it and back-ending it into a Radius server and stuff so that we can do logs and you can book times and stuff, but some of that's happening. It's just not all happening yet. The problem with student developed websites is I don't trust them with root access on the server, so getting the website things and stuff up and running, especially when they insist on MySQL, can be somewhat of a challenge. Alrighty, now, alright, so shall we make a start and see what we can work out from last week and stuff? I think we'll need to reconfigure the workstations. You'll need to at least reconfigure Pod1's workstations, because they will have lost their IP configuration information, except for the workstation on Pod1, workstation 1, which Chris managed to hard code the information into and I preserved after I'd finished fiddling with it.
Yay!
I was going to delete your configuration, but I had a flash of conscience and thought, yes, well, once I finished updating this works. Yeah, I know. All right, we're going to split up and we've got 4 connections to the bundle. Do you guys want to go and check the configurations of the workstations and make sure they're still happy? And then we will get on with our routing protocols. I believe the routers should still be in the same... Oh, workstations on pod 1 and 2, everybody, has a TFTP server that works. So if you want to copy running-config to TFTP and have a play with it, it works now on workstations 1 and 2. Why don't the other ones work yet? Because I haven't been in and I've actually got to pull the workstations out of the pod to actually put the software on there. But you can copy the configurations onto workstations 1 and 2. So if you're clever enough to set up routing between all the other routers and workstations 1 and 2, you can back your routers up there for the your configurations up there for the foreseeable future. Alright guys, who's taking which workstation to check the configurations on these?
I'm checking 4 now, and it is still set.
Oh, goody.
I'll grab the one on pod 1.
I'll do pod 3. I can do one of them on pod 3 if somebody else wants to do the other one. I'll do 5.
Alright. And there should be another workstation left still for John to do if he wants to do one.
On pod 2, or what should that be? I'm having trouble keeping track of the numbers here.
Yeah, you can check the other one on pod 2 with me, John, if you like. So that's workstation 3.
Okay, you're doing 4?
Yeah, he's doing 4. So you do 3, and then you're going to run ifconfig and make sure the IP information is configured incorrectly and that you can ping your router. You all need to be able to ping your routers, everybody. That's what we're ascertaining, that the network configuration hasn't been broken by some idiot work experience student. TM, patent pending.
Workstations 5 and 6 are both up because I can ping them both from routers.
Okay.
Did you say 5 and 6 are working?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Alright, workstation 1 can successfully ping the router.
Excellent. Now... someone checking workstation 2?
Are we doing all of them or just one per pod?
No, we're doing all of the workstations per pod. We're doing 1, 2... In theory, we're going to have it so that you can get it, all of them.
Does anybody else want to grab 2 or do you want me to grab that one?
Anyone else want to have a look at 2?
I'll grab it.
Okie dokie. This must be all a bit bizarre for you guys. It must be earlier for most of you guys. This must be all a bit off-putting.
Yeah, it almost tripped me up.
Oh, there's this guy called Chris who did this time page on QCat.org. If you go and have a look at that...
We've been through that. Yes. That was brought up earlier today, as a matter of fact, yes.
I don't think I mentioned it.
You mentioned the page last week as a page we should look at near the end of lecture.
I did. Last week I did mention the fact that was a page we should probably look at. Look, I'm very happy with that page. That has saved me a lot of grief, let me tell you. And the other thing that's worth mentioning is that if you've got a Mac... Kevin has found some utility that reads CHM files, so if you tear apart Ciscopedia, there is a CHM file in there and you can read it on your Mac. Yay.
I can't get into the server, it's probably too many connections.
Okay, so when you've finished messing with your workstations, somebody log out. Please.
I'll log out. Alright, I've disconnected.
Why it can only handle 4 telnet connections, I will never know. It's brain damaged. But, yeah.
Is the data that we're working on, Kerry, is that still wherever it was on the slash temp directory of Qkit?
Should be. I haven't taken it down. And I'm ready to edit any bits you need. The other news, in case you don't follow me on Twitter, and I wouldn't blame you if you didn't, I successfully installed Linux to a physical hard disk attached to a virtual machine and plugged it into a real box, and it booted. So if ever you need to do a Linux install, that's one way of doing it.
Cool.
Whoa.
What's the command to view routing table under Linux? I don't quite remember.
Is it just route space minus n. Route space minus n will stop it from looking up the host names, or just route. There we go. And in unrelated off-topic news, Grace has a telemarketing job, so we're all very happy about that. She starts on Monday.
Excellent.
Cool. So she's all legal and stuff?
Yes, she is. She is on an 820 partner visa and can work now.
Nice.
What is she selling so that I don't hang up on her?
I don't think she'll call the States. It's a $129 entertainment book, she thinks, although who knows, it could be anything by next week.
Workstation 3 can ping the router and its IP and gateway are set properly.
Excellent. So, everybody, I think that means all of the workstations have been checked out. We're all good to go and continue on with the next stuff.
Yeah, workstation 2 can hit the router.
Alrighty. Now, the next thing to check, guys, is whether the routers can ping each other over the serial links. Has everybody made sure that that is happening at this point? Or did we check that last week?
I think we checked that last week.
Alright, well, we don't have to check it now, and then if it blows up and doesn't work, and the routing protocol doesn't work, you'll have to go in and find out why. So, that's just how that works. Alright. Now, last week we spoke about routing protocols, and we spoke about how you can have a routing protocol distribute information to other routers so that it can learn about routers that exist. It can learn about routes that exist so that it knows how to route to other devices. Now, if you're running a home network, you've got usually one subnet route, 192.168.1.0/24, pointing at your local subnet, or 10 dot whatever if you've got some other sort of router, and you have a default route to your ISP, and that's the end of it. But obviously it would make sense that if you had an ISP, the ISP shouldn't have to know about every other ISP, because that would be bad, but the ISP does need to learn about how it can route to other places in the world. So when you set up a routing table, you generally only concern yourself with how to get to the next hops, unless you are like a core router with multiple links coming in. Does that follow?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Now, so at the moment we have static routes actually, did we end up getting all of the static routes working? Did we succeed in getting it to go from one end of the topology to the other, or not quite?
I think so.
Well, 3 doesn't.
We had a problem with one of the. Yeah.
Do we know why?
I'm working on that now, actually.
I remember there was a problem with router 3. Don't forget, show controller serial 0 blah 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 is your friend as well. Show controller will dump the information on various hardware aspects of the router, so you can look at things like the state of serial lines, the state of ADSL connections, the state of ISDN connections, various status registers, and those sorts of things. And if you have unknown cables like DC or DTE cables and you're not sure what the cable is, you can actually tell which should be the DCE end by looking at the show controller output. Alrighty, so while Kevin messes around with router 3... Okay. So, while we're working at that, shall we start working on routers 1 and 2 and putting in the static routing stuff? So I'm assuming... Sorry, the dynamic routing stuff. I'm assuming you guys can trace route from workstation 1 to workstation 3? Or workstation 2 to workstation 4? Have we ascertained that that definitely works at this point? Ah, welcome back.
My wireless dropped. It does that from time to time.
That's alright. It happens to the best of us. I used to have the most terribly unreliable wireless internet, and it was dismal. In fact, a lot of the home routers with wireless, you put them under significant load, and they're done for. Okay, guys, so can we get from workstation 1 to workstation 3? Does that trace route work, or workstation 2 to workstation 4, or workstation 4 to workstation 1, or is that half of the topology working?
2 to 4 is not... I'm trying to go 2 to 5, and it's not working.
That means we have a problem with... the router between... We have a problem with the connection between 2 and 3, I think. That's right, 2 and 3. Until proved otherwise, I'm blaming Kevin, because he's on 3 at the moment, for no other reason than that. Does 1 to 3 work, though, guys, so that we can start with the dynamic routing on the first half of the topology?
2 to 3 is not working.
That's okay. Is 1 to 2 working, though? Router 1 to router 2.
What's the IP address for, Well, I can look at my routing table. Never mind.
Where are you logged into?
I'm happy... What do you want the IP address for? I've got a file in front of me. I can't find it for you.
Oh, what's the IP address for router 2?
10.1.1.2.
Okay. Oh, never mind.
Hang
router
on. No, no, no.
1 is busy.
Oh, 10... Okay, the links between 1 and 2 are 10.1.1.1 and 10.1.1.2, between 1 and 2.
Chris, okay. Are you logged into 1?
Well, I'm logged into the... Pod 1 serial console, I guess. But I can't connect to the... I can't connect to the port with the router because it's busy. I was going to connect to it and ping 10.1.1.2.
Alright, I'm out of the router. I was in there first.
Okay, no problem.
I can ping from workstation 3 to workstation 1, so it seems to be functioning that far.
Ah, well, that's answered our question then. There you go, well done. So, while we're all messing around, I think we've ascertained that we have connectivity between router 1 and 2.
Yes.
Alright, shall we break it? Okay. What we want to do here is to set the... take out the static routes that have been hammered in, and we're going to put in rip routes. Now, if you have Syscopedia handy, it will come in handy. What you need to do, and I think everybody's... Hello, I'm lecturing, so talk to Grace. There is actually a neighbors thing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you guys how to put the static, take out the static routes and put the dynamic routes in. So, first thing we need to do is somebody needs to get onto router 1 and somebody needs to get onto router 2, and you need to do, pardon me, no route blah to take out those static routes before we put the dynamic ones in.
I can go into router 1 unless somebody else is...
Sure, go for it.
Yeah, okay, so guys, you want to take the static routes out, show IP route, should only have connected routes in your routing table when you guys are done taking out the static routes. And how are you going with router 3 there, Kevin? Getting anywhere?
I tried to put in the static route and it didn't work, so I actually took out the IP route so I can keep up with the class.
Have you even ascertained whether the serial link is connected? Have you done a controller on the serial like I was talking about earlier? Because it's possible there's no cable plugged into your router.
So to remove those routes, it's no. When I do no route question mark, it's giving me an ambiguous command error.
When you guys added the routes in, you guys were in global configuration mode, weren't you? So you did IP route, blah 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 blah. I'm just about to look it up in Syscopedia. Yeah. So you should just be able to go no space IP space route space, and then you've got to put the destination address and the netmask in for the route, and that will take it out. It's because when you hit question mark after typing route, there's route, route dash map, and route whatever. So you've got to go no route space question mark, and it'll tell you what you can do then. And the URL in the chat is the free app that reads CHM files on the Mac. So if anybody wants that, there it is.
So why is it that when I do show IP route, it shows it with a /24 netmask, but I can't actually type it in with a /24 netmask?
Because that is Cisco IOS making you type in 255.255.255.0.
Okay, so there's no good reason for it. It's just them being dumb.
I don't believe you can put in slash prefix on iOS. It's not something. It'll show it to you that way, but it won't accept it that way.
That was clever. Whoever thought of that?
It says no serial cable attached.
Ah, I'll go and have a look in the server room then, shall I? I shall be back in a moment, guys.
Alright, static routes are out of router 1.
So I think I've done this right on router 2. All I needed to do is take out the two static routes to the other two routers, right? Everything else here is serial that I leave alone.
Yeah, that should be good.
Hey, what do you know? I figured it out.
Yay!
After I typed the command 14 times and remembered I had to do config T first.
I've done that.
Corey's alive and well.
I am, finally.
You were sick last week, I heard.
Yeah, I think it's all the years of call center work, I'm not sure, but when I get sick, it's usually a couple times a year, once a year, pretty major, but I usually lose my voice. And it was coincidentally, for my birthday, my family got me a new desk and shelving unit, which is very nice, but unfortunately all my equipment is on that, and it kind of happened around when I got sick, so my computer, this one that has all my stuff on it, was not functional, as was not my router or modem, because they used to sit on said shelf. So, yeah, it was kind of a bad week, and the night of the class, I was kind of high on Tylenol and some kind of cold meds, whatever you call them, Sinutabs or whatever, and things weren't working, and I was just like, no.
Hello, I'm back.
Welcome back to the land of the living, anyway.
Yeah, welcome back, Corey. Let me guess.
Thanks.
You forgot daylight savings?
apparently. Don't know what's going on with that.
Well, you guys have switched into daylight savings. So lectures are an hour earlier now. It's alright. Somebody had to do it. Somebody had to do it. We couldn't get away without one person. I actually got picked up an hour early from school once because somebody forgot about daylight savings, and the bus turned up at 2 o'clock and picked me up. And they couldn't... I said, gee, that was a quick after-lunch thing, and I'm leaving already, and they let me go out the door, and I got all the way home, and I was an hour early.
Wow.
Yeah, fun in the box.
When is your guys' daylight savings, then?
We don't have it.
Oh. Oh, crap. Okay.
And this guy named Chris made this really cool time page.
Yeah, yeah, if you go to www.qcat.org/time.php, it's really cool. It's got all these different time zones and everything.
Well, I hope I haven't missed too much for today. Crap.
That's all right.
We're done.
We'll forgive you this one. See ya. No, it's always still working on stuff. Okay. Kevin, you want to check both serial interfaces on that router, because I am seeing a cable running from router 2 to router 3, so you've either configured the wrong serial port, or I need to know that it's connected to the wrong serial port. Or somebody else can go in and show controller and see what's attached to both of those serial 000 and 001 on router 3. Okay, has everybody cleared the routing tables in router 1 and 2? The static routes that you'd hammered in for the remote networks?
2 is done.
Alrighty, who's doing number 1?
Jason, I believe.
Sorry, I missed that. What was that?
Number 1. How's number 1 going? Apparently number 2 has its routes taken out.
Yeah, number 1 is done.
Alrighty. Okay. Now, what we need to do now, guys, is we need to put in rip routes, and we need to put in neighbors. Now, to do this, we go into a configuration mode called router configuration mode. So, what you do, I'm going to put some examples in chat here. You go config t router rip. And then you say network x.y.z.wg. I didn't put enough letters in there, that'll do. So, what you guys need to do is you need to put in router rip and the networks that your router is capable of reaching directly connected.
Okay, so router 1 would be directly to router 2, right?
No. You don't need to redistribute connected routes because it knows it's connected directly to router 2. But what you need to tell it is that router 1 has network 192.168.25.0 available to it, and you want to advertise that route.
So from router 1, you would provide it the network made available by router 2?
No, from router 1, you provide it the network that router 1 has available for it. Remember that as a network administrator, you only get to say what's available from the routers that you have control over. So if you're Dodgycom ISP, the only networks you know about are Dodgycom's networks, so you can only advertise Dodgycom's networks. Does that make sense?
It's what you're advertising. Okay, yes, that makes sense.
Chris, do you want to do router 1, or do you want me to do it?
If you're already in place, go for it.
Okay, I'm actually not logged in right now. I can log back in and do it.
Corey, www.qcat.org/temp has a nicely formatted document. Well, relatively nicely formatted document to keep you up to where we got up to. So if you want to have a skim through that while we're all banging around here on the routers, it will give you an idea as to where we're getting up to, I think.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
And the other news that you didn't hear last week because you weren't here, which is quite understandable, was that we got donated some free routers. So as an end of semester prize, if you put in all of your labs and worksheets and stuff, you go in the draw to win a MikroTik wireless router. Do 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 do.
Wow, right on.
I won't bore you with the specifications of that. You can get it from last week's lecture. But it's a cool router.
Yeah, I did catch up on the audio portion. I just have to catch up on this file. So, yeah.
Yep. Okay, cool. No worries. That's good. I'm glad you got the audio bit of that. But we're not sure how many of them we're giving away, but we're definitely giving one away to a lucky member of the Exploration class, and that's a 5-port gigabit router with N wireless and USB port.
Very nice.
Who pays for shipping?
We will. I mean, technically, we should make you guys pay for the shipping, but you know, then if you didn't decided you didn't want the router, we could keep it. But we'll probably work something out.
Sounds like a pretty fair deal, either.
Yeah, well, given you get a router for $20, I reckon it's pretty cheap. But we'll work something out. We'll see how poor we all are at the end of the year, but we should be able to scrape the shipping up for somebody.
$20 from Australia, that's it?
Maybe 20 or 30. It wouldn't be much more than that, because it's not a heavy device. It weighs like 142 grams, so you're not looking at a big, it's not bulky.
Well, Jesus, it could cost me $20 to ship something to the US.
Well, we'll sort something out. Okay, so, who's doing router 2 with the network statements?
For router 1, do I just put the one network statement in then?
Yes'm. You do.
Okay, and then once that's done, just exit out?
Well, there is another wrinkle. And I want you to do... Once you've exited out of router configuration mode, I want you to do a debug... IP rip, and to turn that off, you do an undebug all, and I want you to tell me why your router isn't advertising its prefix, because it won't. There's another little wrinkle that you've got to go through, but yeah, that's what you have to do on router 1.
I mistyped and put in one incorrect network and then the correct one. So to be thorough, I'm sure there's a way I can cancel out the false one.
Yes, no space, network space, and the false one.
So once I do the debug IP rip, what should I be seeing?
You should be seeing a rip update every 30 seconds spitting onto your console. And it should be telling you what things are being advertised and which ones aren't, I think.
Okay, it says sending V1 update. Shouldn't we be using V2 or?
Ah, yes. So go back into router rip and do version 2.
What's the difference?
Version 1 doesn't send any subnet mask information with its updates, and version 2 prefers to use multicast transmissions for routing updates.
Okay, so I'm going to go config T and then router rip. And then version space 2, is that right?
Yes, and you probably want to go no version 1.
So why is debug undebug and everything else is no debug or no whatever?
If you do no debug IP rip, you can stop it from doing the rip debugging, but it's quicker to type undebug all, which turns the whole lot off.
It says suppressing null update. Is that normal?
No, it's not. That is half of your problem. Oh, did anybody end up having a look at that understanding ipaddressing.htm that I stuck up in the networking folder under general instructions? It's actually quite good, even though it was ripped out of a PDF.
I did a little bit, but I haven't gone through it thoroughly yet.
Same here.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, have you figured out why it's a null update yet? Matthew, I think. I think you were working on that one.
Jason.
Or was it Jason?
It was Jason.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm reading... I've got a blog article up here, but it's not making a whole lot of sense to me.
No, that's okay, but did you see what was happening in the actual debug output as to why it's a null update?
No, I didn't catch it.
Okay. The reason it is a null update is because the RIP version 2 does not broadcast routing updates over point-to-point links. What links do you have between your router 1 and router 2?
Point-to-point link.
Uh-huh. So what you need to do is, I believe you need to go neighbor and the address of router 2, and that will actually cause it to broadcast the routing update over to router 2. And whoever's on router 2, you have to do that on router 1.
So do I give it,
why does it not?
The other end of the serial?
Sorry?
Do I do that for the other end of the PPP link, or do I do the point-to-point link, or do I do it for the actual IP of the router, like the 192.168 or whatever?
You go neighbor and the other end of the PPP link. So if you're on 10.1.1.1 on your end of the PPP link, you go neighbor 10.1.1.2 because you've got to tell it where it's got to send it to.
Okay, in router rip config mode?
Router rip mode, yes.
And why does it not send them over point-to-point links by default?
Because if a point-to-point link was a modem, you may not necessarily want routing updates flooding your modem every 30 seconds.
So if you had a slow link like that, the idea is that you'd probably set those up as static routes?
Yes, you certainly would. Generally, the difference between when you use dynamic routing and when you use static routing is if you have stub networks, which are networks that hang off the end of a big spaghetti of networky stuff, you usually configure static routes to the stub networks because there is no advantage in the stub network knowing the entire routing table.
Okay, so I'm still getting suppressing null updates.
You've also got to do on the serial interface, you need to do no IP split horizon, I believe.
Do we know what that is?
Yes, I do. It tells it that it is not to consider those links as ones that are not to have the... hang on, let me get you a nicely worded answer. Okay, it's in router config, rip number, IP split horizon.
Oh, wait, so I'm doing this in rip mode or I'm doing this in interface?
Rip. Hang on, I'm looking. Interface configuration mode for your serial interface. If the routes are frame relay links or SMDS, then the split horizon is active, so you need to turn it off on your serial link.
So no IP split horizon, is that right?
That's the one.
So I haven't done any of the serial stuff up until now. Others have done that. So I'm in the config T mode. It's interface 0/0/0.
Interface serial 0/0/0. The other handy command for debugging this is show ip rip database.
Still getting it, Kerry.
You're still getting the suppressing null update? Have you put in your neighbor command in the router rip mode?
Yes.
I can have a look if you want. I can have a quick look and see what the output is and see if I can nut it down for you. Otherwise, it's a case of Googling for an article as to how to get rip working over serial links. So, do you want me to take a quick peek?
Yeah, let me pop. All right, I'm out.
Alrighty. Which router do you want? Which router was this we're looking at?
Router 1.
Does Ian know about this guy or not? Okay, let's have a look. Do you still have the debug rip stuff turned on?
Should be, yeah.
Okay, the reason you are seeing a suppressing null update error message there is it sending it to the Ethernet, fast Ethernet 00, and as far as it's concerned, the 25.0 route is already part of fast Ethernet 00, therefore it doesn't need to send that routing information to that interface.
Okay, but I never saw anything about it sending it out to serial, though.
No, neither am I. Hang on, I've got no TerraTerm scripts in this version of JAWS. Has anybody noticed the TerraTerm scripts are broken in JAWS 13? Very, very unhappy about that.
Yeah, I'm actually using JAWS right now. I've pretty much stopped using JAWS for terminal, though I used NVDA.
Yeah, it doesn't work in JAWS 13 anymore.
It was only working intermittently for me in 12. I mean, sometimes it would echo things that changed and sometimes not, and that's still what it's doing for me in 13.
Yeah, it was flaky. It's flaky as hell.
So QCRT works, just like FYI.
Eh, fair enough.
It also costs quite a bit, but...
Is there a huge advantage over using TerraTerm and NVDA instead of Secure CRT and paying a lot of money, however much that is?
Let's see. Hang on a second. What's the address of the router? Router 1 is 10.1.1.1, isn't it, guys?
I believe so.
Ah, you've got neighbor 10.1.1.2 in here. That's not going to work.
You need the
remote end of the serial interface. So I'm going to log out and you can fix it, and we'll see if it works then.
Well, wait, because router 1 is 10.1.1.1. The remote end would be 10.1.1.2, no?
No, I think you'll find... Yeah, it is the other way around, because remember the ISP is always 111 and the outlying routers are 112. I'm not laughing at you or anything. I mean, it took me a while to work it out as well. I'm just pointing out that, you know, that's why it doesn't work.
Yeah, okay. So, for whatever reason, I thought that router was 111 and I negligently didn't look, so...
Ah, but if you'd done some IP host magic, you would have been able to put in names instead of numbers, and that would have been a bit easier. But that's all good.
So do I need to do a no command to take that other one out?
Yes, you do. No neighbor 10.1.1.2, and then put in neighbor 10.1.1.1, and see if you start seeing rip updates. Kevin, did you get anywhere with your serial interfaces on router 3?
Well, I've always been able to ping router 2 and the workstations and router 2, so that would make me think the serial's...
Alright, so how would... So what can't you ping?
I couldn't ping router 1 or workstations 1 or 2.
Okay. Well, we'll wait until the routing is in place, the dynamic routing is in place between 1 and 2, and we'll... does somebody want to start working on the dynamic routing? Has somebody done the RIP stuff for router 2 yet? And the RIP stuff for router 3?
I've been working on 2.
Are we using RIP 1 or RIP 2?
We're using version 2.
Kerry, do you still have debug on, or do I need to flick it back?
I left debug on. I didn't turn that off on you. Now the person on router 2, you need to set your rip up and make sure that you've got the neighbor stuff hammered in for router 1, and that you have managed to, that your rip updates are going out.
Still getting it.
And you have managed to put the neighbor 10.1.1.1 in?
Yep.
And you set no IP split horizon on serial 000?
Shit. Hold on. I think I did 00.
Ah. That might break it.
Okay, I did it for serial 000 and it's still not working.
Okay. Try advertising the 10.1.1.0 network Try putting that in as well and see if that fixes it. I'm just Googling for an answer as we speak. I did look at this last semester, but I forgot. It does work, though, when you get it to go.
Okay, so it would be network space 10.1.1.0. Do I have to put a mask in?
No, you don't, because it knows the masks. And the article in chat is about what I'm about to start skimming through. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm seeing different stuff now. This might be good. Yeah, I'm seeing 92.31.88. I'm seeing, yeah, it looks like I've got communication.
Alrighty. So don't forget to advertise the link for your serial as well.
Now it's saying 192.31.88.0 via 0.0.0.0. What does that mean?
That means it's the default route.
31, is that... Wait, is that pod 3?
No, the 192.91.88 is the ISP network on router 2.
Now, should I be seeing rip updates for router for pod 3 or not? No, I guess not.
It depends on whether somebody set the rip stuff up on pod 3.
That's really cool.
So the fact that you're seeing what you're seeing, Jason, should indicate that I've done router 2 correctly as well?
Looks like.
You might want to check what router 2 is doing, because you need to see whether router 2 is sending stuff as well. Or just do a show IP route on router 1 and 2. You can do an undebug all and do a show IP route and see what routes are in your table.
Matthew, do you want me to log out so you can check both these routers?
No, I'm logged into router 2 now. I've been working on it all along.
No, I just meant, did you want to look at router 1 and see what it's doing?
No, because I've been listening to you and I think I'm seeing the same stuff in my debug, but I'd rather look at the routing table, so I'll do that.
Cool.
That link I put in chat, guys, you might want to stash away. It looks really good. Cisco has really tidied up a lot of their documentation.
How'd you find that? Just do a Cisco?
I searched for... I think I searched for... RIP over serial links. Cisco RIP over serial links netted me that as the first result.
Yeah, there is an absolutely staggering amount of documentation on Cisco's site.
It's pretty insane. I don't argue that at all. And it's a lot better than what it used to be. It used to be quite fragmented, but I've noticed that they've got like chapters and guides for all the books. Actually, speaking of stuff like that, considering we're almost at the end of getting this going, did you want to talk about how you got Dynamips going? Because I know some people were interested in that.
Sure.
Under the proviso that I don't care where your iOS images came from, we can talk about that off the recording, but we'll assume you have them.
Absolutely. I'm happy to talk about it after recording. Dynamips is, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, is a Cisco router emulator. So it's not a simulator. It actually runs real iOS and that sort of stuff. And there's a command line interface to it. It runs on Windows, Linux, Mac, etc., etc. And you give it iOS images, and it actually boots up, and it looks like a real router. It acts like a real router. It doesn't go as fast, but you can get, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 routers running inside your PC and actually set up virtual links between them and serial links and Ethernet links and set up routes and do all kinds of really cool stuff. I'd be happy to actually do a CaviCast on it if you guys want it, because I've actually gotten it sort of mostly working, and there's some tricks to getting it to perform correctly. It's all in the documentation, but I'd be happy to talk about it.
Yeah, we can certainly do that. I was going to do the IPv6 this Friday, unless you want me to push IPv6 back and you do Dynamips, or we splice them both in.
No, I don't have to do Dynamips now. I just think I can do it.
Okay. Does everybody want to hear about how to set up Dynamips at some point in the future? Because
yeah,
we could certainly...
that'd be really cool.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's actually quite easy to get set up, and once you've switched things off, Kerry, I can talk about other aspects of it.
Yeah, that's fine. Do we have routers 1 and 2 communicating happily with Rippy Bits? Do they seem to be picking up each other's routing table? Have we seen the routes for the other router in the table?
Seems like it.
Yes, it appears to be working, and I also have an R flagged or a RIP route in my table to get to the network on router 3, which I wouldn't think was possible yet.
That depends what Kevin's up to. He may have got that bit working. Can you get to the stuff on router 3? Alright, so does anybody have any questions about that procedure? Any questions about that routing stuff before I hit stop? Did it make sense to anyone? I realise we went through it fairly quickly, but does anybody understand roughly how that RIP stuff is supposed to work?
The only thing I don't get is the split horizon stuff, but I can look that up.
Okay, basically, by default, RIP is only sent out over broadcast networks, so if you've got Ethernet or broadcast topologies such as Ethernet and wireless, and it only summarizes one route per broadcast domain, so if you've got subroutes to other things, then they're not going to get advertised. So what the split horizon does is, if you turn that off, it will make sure that any routes to subnets are still broadcast. Which is essentially what that split horizon mechanism does.
Okay.
It is actually documented in that article that I linked to in chat, so have a read and then we can come back and talk about it if that's confusing. But because we have serial links, you can either defeat the split horizon mechanism by forcing in the neighbours thing. So, for example, if you put the network 10.1.1.1 in and you didn't put the neighbours thing in, it wouldn't advertise that network because it wasn't a broadcast link.
Okay. Now, is RIP used widely? I mean, I got the impression that pretty much most people used other protocols now.
It depends on what you're doing, and it depends on what sort of networks you're setting up. I mean, RIP isn't the best protocol for large-scale deployments because of its time to converge and various hold-down timers and stuff. However, a lot of consumer-grade routers implement RIP, and there is actually a service under Windows called the RIP Listener. And if you start the RIP Listener service, it will automatically add routes to your Windows routing table if they are advertised by a RIP-capable router. So there are situations in which RIP can be useful and is still used, especially on certain workstation configurations and stuff. If you... obviously, for bigger deployments and stuff, you're going to use a protocol such as OSPF or BGP or whatever. We don't cover those in Exploration 1. We don't really cover routing protocols much, but I thought we'd take us there so that you guys could see how it all worked. If you're actually setting this stuff up, it pays to do the research into which one you actually want to use and for what reasons. There are some Cisco specific routing protocols that you can also use, but that has the disadvantage of it not working with gear that isn't Cisco. So if you've got non-Cisco gear, you need to take that into consideration when you're picking a routing protocol.
Cool.
This is pretty cool. I'm on a Pod 2 workstation now, and I can seem to ping every other workstation, so we must have all done it correctly.
Can you SSH into another workstation? Or Telnet into another workstation? Actually, no, you'll have to SSH, because you don't have any Telnet. I don't see why you wouldn't be able to, but I'm just posing the question. The other thing that you should be able to do, and you guys can have a fiddle with in the next few days, is you guys on workstations, or on routers 2 and 3, should be able to copy your configurations to the TFTP server on workstations 1 or 2, if you so desire. Alright, any other pending stuff before I hit stop? Anything that people want to ask about, that sort of thing?